Hi everybody, I'm Brenda and I am an addict. I know that because I live to use and I use to live. I'm blessed to be alive, I'm grateful to be clean today, and I'm really honored to be here with everybody who's here. My topic is when pleasure turns to pain, and if you're sitting in here and you're an addict, like you already have a concept of that. And they say when the pain gets great enough, we change. It took me a long time for the pain of my addiction to get great enough in order for me to do anything about it. I think in the beginning, like even when the pain came, like I was in denial that it was pain, like this was just some things that went on in my life, and I refused to do anything about it. As long as I can continue to cover up the pain that I refused to feel by using so that I didn't have to feel it and address it, life was good. You know, it talks in the book about at some point the drugs stop working and like the euphoria wears off and then it becomes a problem. And like, I don't remember exactly when that moment was for me. I just know that it happened. You know, they say the disease is progressive, and mine progressed at different rates. Like it took me a long time to progress to the part where like I was caught up and knew it. Once I got caught up, like I stayed in that space for a long time, and then some other things happened in my life, and the pain started showing up, and I continued to cover it up and deny that things were painful. I lost my husband and my mother in 2005, 6 weeks apart from one another, and I wanted to pretend like I was the big girl and I could handle it and it didn't hurt, and that was just how it was supposed to be, and I told myself that they were in a better place, and like parts of that's true. They both suffered from some really horrible illnesses, but like I didn't allow myself to feel that pain. I covered up that pain by immediately jumping into a relationship with somebody who was no good for me. I was no good for them. We were both really bad for my children, and I caused pain for them too, because like the pain of addiction didn't all roll down on me. It rolled down on everybody I was involved with, not the least of all my kids. And you know, I feel horrible for that. I just don't allow them to hold me to it as much anymore. So I got into this relationship and I hung on to it, and like same thing as somebody else was talking about earlier, like it really wasn't a relationship. Like you were my supplier and I'll put up with your shit and I'll do whatever I have to do to get the next one, and I'll pretend like you're not hurting me and you're not hurting my children, because as long as I cover that all up and I don't let it come out on the surface, like everything's okay. And I kept stuffing that pain. I lost my dad a couple years later in 2007, and then like that was really bad because now I don't have any parents, and my kids don't have grandparents and stuff. And I told myself at that point, like, well, you know, now I don't have anybody to tell me no. Well, that was crazy because like nobody could tell me no for a long, long time. You know, like I said, I don't remember when the fun of my drug use, when the euphoria of all that left, because for a long time, like, it was fun getting high. And it talks in the book about, you know, we're often proud of the bizarre behaviors that we display in order to maintain our addiction, and like I was, because I could do this, and you couldn't tell me I couldn't, and I could do this, and you couldn't stop me, and I could do this, and I could probably do it better than you. And reality is, like, none of that's true. You know, like, I manipulate you, you manipulate me back, and it's crazy. You know, we were talking about some step work and stuff, and like my third step was where I got a real hit of that more will be revealed. Like I was sitting there writing, and it came to me that like when I act on self-will, I am the one who is responsible for creating like all the unmanageability of my life that I had to admit to in the first step, which ultimately turns into the insanity that I had to write about and address and my second step. And the unmanageability and the insanity always brings me more pain. It also says in the literature, like when we showed up in the rooms, we were merely looking for the absence of pain, and that was me. I realize, you know, my pain may have been greater than yours, yours may have been greater than mine, it's not the same, but if yours not as bad as mine, like it doesn't have to be. Like my pain was custom made for me. It didn't have to get any worse. I'm sure it could have. There's still some not yets in my story, but like I'm not willing to go find out what happens if I address those not yets, and if I use, I will address every single one of them, because there's not a whole lot of them left. So I lived my life for a long time running around scatterbrained, doing what I thought I needed to do, and actually I wasn't doing anything that I needed to do. You know, I got in some legal trouble way early on and, like, just blew that off because that wasn't my fault. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I allowed myself to tell myself that. But, like, my life was unmanageable way back then. The first time I was arrested, I was 23 years old, and I didn't get in trouble for a long time after that. Later on, and, like, I started using when I was 12. I didn't get clean until I was 45. Do the math, man. Like, that's a long time. That's a lot of years of pain. That's a lot of years of denial. And in 2008, like, I lost some very dear people to me in the year of 2005. And, like, I thought I was off to the races then. And I was, and my life changed, and my addiction progressed, and it got pretty bad. But I still refused to acknowledge the pain that the addiction was bringing myself and everybody around me. When I got in trouble in October of 2008, like, it was painful not only for me to get dragged out of my car and thrown up against it and arrested and handcuffed and thrown in jail and stuff, but, like, I still was so numb to all my feelings. Like, I didn't allow myself to feel the pain of that, and I wanted to tell you that, like, I didn't feel the shame and the guilt of it, but, like, reality is, and it took a while, and it set in, and, like, I caused my kids a lot of shame over it, too, because the day after I got arrested, occasionally the school district hands a paper out to everybody in the school, and it was the next day. And my kids took, like, a whole lot of ridicule over my actions. And it sucked, you know, and, like, they went through it, and they hurt over it and stuff, too. And it talks about in the book, too, like, we did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. And, like, when I got here, I didn't believe that. Like, I thought I hurt everybody around me even more than I hurt myself and my family and everybody else, my friends, if I had any. And what I come to realize now is, like, that's the truth. Like, most of all, I harmed myself because by hurting you, it hurts me. So I don't purposely try to hurt anybody, least of all myself, anymore. I thought in November of 2008, after the arrest, the embarrassment, the shame of my kids being evicted from a home, moving into a place that was horrible, but, like, I needed a place to live, and I only lived there because the only reason the people left me move in there was, first of all, the house was a mess and nobody else would have, and, like, I sold for them. So the insanity just got worse because, like, now you're getting all my money and now I'm pissed off at you because you have all my money and I don't have any of it. And it's your fault. It wasn't my fault. So I moved into this house, or right before I moved into this house, like, I had all this stuff coming up. I had legal issues. I had to move. I had kids that were in trouble. I had them in counseling, but there were certain things that they couldn't talk about and stuff. So, like, they were holding pain as much as I was. I thought I reached my bitter ends in November of 2008, and, like, I tried to take my own life because I thought that was the only way that the pain was going to stop and anything was going to get better and my kids would be able to move forward and the world would be a better place without me. And I didn't want to get high anymore, but I didn't think I could stop. So I made this plan, and the first one didn't work, but, you know, as addicts, like, we'll manipulate and contort and twist. So I made another plan, and I didn't realize it then, but, like, I realize it now. Like, God always had my life, like, all the cars I didn't wreck, all the times I didn't OD, all the times I didn't get beat up, all the times I wasn't raped, beaten, murdered, whatever. But I made this plan, and, like, I decided on this one certain day that I was going to die, and I went and I picked up this prescription, and I was sitting there in the house, and, like, the crazy part of it was, I'm sitting there, and I'm ready to take myself out, but, like, I'm waiting for the dope man to show up, because I want to get one high, just, like, one more time, just one more time before I do all this, and he didn't show up, and, like, that's okay. You know, that was God's will, that he wasn't coming to my door, and there was this woman who ministers, like, for the Jehovah Witnesses. She came into my life, like, when my husband was sick and my mother was sick and things were going bad, and she was there for a while, and then, like, she left, but, like, she showed up when I needed that angel, like, God sends people to you. So then I didn't see her for a while, and I saw her one day, and I told her that I moved, and she started showing up at my door again, and then I started avoiding her because, like, I didn't want her to know, and I didn't want her to see what was happening to me because she knew some things that I didn't. And same day, she shows up at my door, and, like, I wouldn't answer the door because I didn't want to. I was afraid if I answered the door that honesty would come up and like I would tell somebody what was going on with me, and I didn't want you to know how fucked up my life was, because on the outside like it appeared that I had it all together and like really I didn't. So I took all this medication. My knees were shaking out from underneath me. My heart was pounding like a drum, and like that was scary enough, but like when it got really scary was when I quit shaking and I couldn't hear it anymore. And God said, not today, like just don't close your eyes and don't fall asleep, it'll be okay. Just don't close your eyes and don't fall asleep, it'll be okay. Now, this is in November of 2008, and I think I'm at my bitter ends, and I'm trying to kill myself because the pain is so bad, like I don't want to feel it anymore. And I still was a hard-headed knucklehead who didn't get clean till April of 2009. So after all this, like I had to go out and get 6 months more worth of pain. You know, when I was using, I would find some pleasure in your pain. Like if you were sick and I wasn't, that was pleasing to me because then I had some control. If you were sitting there waiting on me and I knew you were feeling horrible, it made me feel good because I had some control. And like my sponsor tells me now, and it's true, control is an illusion. Control is an absolute illusion. And anytime I've ever tried to control anything, no matter what it was, my drug use, my finances, my children, my relationships, anything going on around me, the more out of control whatever it was became. And I didn't like it, so like that brought me pain too, because I can't control stuff. And I still don't like it, because I still wouldn't be in control of some things. So I went out, like my thing mainly was prescription drugs, and like I would justify it by, well, it's not that my habit's any better than yours, but it's cleaner because I know what I'm getting and it's coming across the counter. But like when you're buying that shit on the street and somebody's handing you something in the dark telling you it's this and you're sticking it in your arm in a dark car, like you don't know. So I got some pain in doing heroin. And like I talked about the different rates of progression and stuff. Like it took me a long time to get to the point that I was with the prescription drugs. But like once they had me beaten up, knocked down, and tore up, like I allowed heroin to come along and thoroughly kick my ass, and it did it really quick. And I'm grateful that it happened as fast as it did, you know. And I talked about, like, I don't remember when the euphoria wore off and the pleasure stopped and the pain started. I do remember when the pain became great enough that I realized that I needed to change. I was in all this legal trouble. My attorney told me, oh, well, you know, maybe you want to get into this outpatient group, because, of course, I lied to him. Oh, yeah, you know, that arrest was a life-changing event. Like, I stopped using. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not an addict, and so on. So to make it look good, because you know how we are as addicts, like, as long as it looks good, it is good. It's okay. I got into this outpatient group, and I would get up in the morning. I would take my son to school. I would drive to the dope man's house. They would drop me off at outpatient. They would take my car and score. And I'd be in there talking all this good stuff. Oh, yeah, I'm done. I'm not. It's okay. And I'd be sitting there watching out the window while I'm saying all this stuff, because, like, I knew the dope man was showing up. When all this stuff culminated, like, it was on a Wednesday at the beginning of an April. And I didn't show up for group. So I couldn't make it look good because obviously I wasn't there. I took my son to school and like I didn't have enough to even go sit in a chair and wait for somebody to show up. So I just didn't go. Well, now I'm sitting there, and the book talks about too, like many of us remember the exact moment when our disease stared us directly in our face. All the rationalizations, justifications, and all that other crap, like, has to be shattered. And I remember that. I was sitting in my house. It was a week before Easter. My kids were at school. I'm sitting there with none of the bills paid, no food in the refrigerator, nobody else I can con, nobody's going to front me. And I'm still all worried about, you know, me. Like, what am I going to tell these people when I don't have Easter dinner? And what am I going to tell my kids? Because I'm going to look like a fool. Like, what am I going to tell my kids, like, when they get up and there's nothing going on? And we didn't do this, all the things that we usually do. And, you know, how our minds work. Well, you know, you could call your sister and tell her you don't have Easter dinner because you know she'd bring you some money. And reality was, like, when she brought me that money, half an hour later, I was going to have to be calling somebody else saying, you know what? Like, I don't have Easter dinner. Can you bring me some money? And a half an hour after that, I still wasn't going to have dinner. I wasn't going to be able to be there for my kids. And I was tired of hiding. And, like, I was tired of the pain rolling up. And, like, right before my disease could say, checkmate, I got you. I was like, no, like, there has to be something different. And, like, that was the moment of clarity for me. I had to humble myself and call another person to come in and say, look, this is what's going on. I need help. I can't do this anymore. Please come in and help me make this phone call, because, like, I didn't even trust myself to make a phone call to somebody and say, look, like, I need to go into detox. So I got a friend to come in the next day, and we did, and we called my counselor at outpatient, and they said, you know, like, I'm really glad you got on us, but, like, it really surprises me, because you would have skated through this program, I would have never tested you, I would have never even known you were still getting high. And I said, that's because I wasn't getting high anymore, like, I was barely able to maintain and come in there, and that's why I wasn't there yesterday. And he said, okay. So said, let me call you back. He made a couple phone calls. He called me back and he said, okay, well, like, I found a bed for you. Can you be there on Easter Sunday? And, like, that was my first moment of surrender. I was like, yep, whatever, dude. Like, fine. You know, I look at that now as truly a blessing, and it doesn't matter what your spiritual beliefs are. But when my higher power chose for me to be able to start my life over on an Easter Sunday, like, I'm not giving that gift back. Like, there's no returns on that, you know. And a little bit of the pain went away then, you know. But some more pain came with it. Like, now I got to sit down and tell my kids, look, I'm abandoning you for another holiday, and you got to go somewhere else. Like, I'm not going to be here. The pain of having to call my sister, who thought I was doing so well because I talk so good, and saying, look, you know, like, this is what's going on with me. This is my only opportunity. Please, can you take my kids and let me screw up just one more holiday for you? Humility is a hard principle. I still have trouble with it. So she said, yeah, and when are you going? How long are you going? And I said, well, they said it'd be 3 to 5 days. And she said, okay, well, as long as it's 3 to 5 days, like, I'll keep them. But, like, don't ask me to keep them any more than that, because I'm done with your crazy shit. So, okay. I never thought that 5 days in the detox unit would be enough to change my life. And reality is, like, it wasn't. It wasn't about what I did in there and what I showed them I was doing and what I said. Like, it was about, what do I do now when I come out? Because I found out while I was in there that my landlords, who were dope fiends too, had had enough of my stuff. They had changed my locks, packed my stuff, were throwing me out, put an eviction notice. And they wanted me to stay in this program, and, like, my life was showing up without my permission while I was somewhere else, and, like, I had to go. You know, I didn't have anywhere for my kids to go. I wasn't going to have anywhere to go. And I come out, and, like, all this crazy stuff is going on. I still got the kids in school. I'm still trying to do outpatient. I come home, all my stuff's packed. I don't have anywhere to lay my head down. I saw an attorney on Friday, and like, Saturday I walked into my first meeting. Now, I could have made every excuse in the world. Oh my God, my house is a mess. I can't find my phones. My kids, this. I've been away. I want to sleep. I'm tired. And, like, something compelled me to show up there on that day at that time and start asking for some help from some other people. And I use the word compelled because that's the only way I can explain it. Like, it wasn't like I wanted to go. It wasn't like I was showing up because I knew there was all these great people in there. It wasn't like I knew anything about it. And I remember, like, walking into my first meeting and actually having to ask somebody, is this a Narcotics Anonymous meeting? And they said, yeah. And it was this gentleman, and he put his arms around me, and he hugged me, and he told me, welcome home. And, like, for the first time in a long time, through deaths and loss of homes and cars and breakups and the insanity of my kids and going to jail and everything, like, this was the first time I wanted to cry, and, like, I still wouldn't allow myself to do it. I honestly don't know if it wasn't for showing up on that day at that meeting and running into this person, like, if I would have came back. But, like, I felt so welcome, and the freedom that I got just in that moment. took a whole lot of that pain away. Because I knew there were some people out there who had done what I'd done, been through what I'd been through, and somehow made it. You know, I can't say honestly that recovery has been completely painless, because that would be a lie. You know, it's hard sometimes. There's some things I don't like doing. Like, I don't like having to get honest with my sponsor all the time. Like, I'm still would rather hide that stuff. But, like, what I find out is when I hide stuff and I stuff stuff, that's when the pain shows up. They told me the pain share is pain lessened. And I find that to be true. Like, when I share what I'm going through or what I've been through or what I put somebody through, and somebody, and it, you get that, me too. Like, that's relief from that pain. You know, I'm still leery about sometimes things that bring me pleasure, because for so long, anything that brought me pleasure for a while always brought me pain in the end. But like, that's not reality for me today. Like, I have some good things going on in my life, and even when things go bad and I got to get rid of some things, something else good or better always comes up. You know, like, I got into recovery, I got a really cool job. I lost that job because I had to go to jail. So, like, I've been to jail clean. I come out, I was supposed to get that job back. I didn't, and that stuff hurt. But, like, that was not an excuse to use. You know, I've acquired some things. I've lost some things. And, like, that stuff's painful when you lose stuff, too. But, like, it was still not an excuse to use. I'm grateful today that I can feel pain. I don't like being in pain, but I'm grateful I can feel it. And the thing with that is, like, I'm grateful that I can feel it when it starts, that I don't have to wait till it gets so great that I can't take it anymore, that I want to kill myself or shoot some dope or run you over or whatever. Because somebody talked about spiritual principles, and like, that's not how I can live my life today. Like, I can't cause you the pain because I don't like something that's going on with me. It's not right for me to cause you pain. You know, and I think back too about like the pain that I have caused some other people. You're like, what about the day that my mother walked into her bedroom and caught me with my hand in her prescription bag? Like, the pain on her face is not something that I'll soon forget. You know, what about the pain in my sister's voice when I had to tell her? Seeing my sister again, like when I showed up at the nursing home too fucked up to take my dad for Christmas. And he didn't understand why. He just knew he wasn't going with me. And then, like, they call my sister, and, you know, it's because the nurse is a bitch and I'm fine and I'm not driving. And, like, it didn't matter if I was driving. I was in no shape to take him into my house. And, like, he just stood there. And that hurt, you know. And I don't live in that pain anymore. But, like, that's the stuff I don't forget. Because I don't want to go through it again. You know, like, when new pain shows up, okay. You know, I'll talk to some people. I'll get through it. I'll deal with it. Without the use of chemicals, but I will still cover up pain with sarcasm, anger, avoidance. Like, if it hurts bad enough, I want to isolate and avoid and not talk about it, and it's not good, so, and I realize that, so I practice doing that. When you hurt me, like, my defenses want to go up, and I want to get sarcastic, or I want to get angry at you because something hurts me, so, like, now I need to hurt you so you can feel the way that I do because I don't like it. But, like, I don't like it when pain comes to me. So what gives me the right to cause pain to anybody else? It talks about relationships are a painful area, and they can be. You know, like, my relationship with my kids, when I got out, I thought, oh, you know, this will be great. Like, my kids will love me again, and they'll be so glad that I'm not shooting dope and running off and being gone all night and sleeping on the couch and not making dinner and sending them to school in dirty clothes. And, like, I come out, and I would try to talk to them, and they really didn't want much to do with me, and, like, I had to accept that because for a long time I really didn't want anything to do with them either. You know, like, I remember coming home with a couple days clean and arguing with my older son about something and him saying to me, why don't you just go shoot another bag of dope, because that's, you know, that's what you really want to do. And, like, that hurt. I was talking to somebody one day, and we were talking about being single mothers and stuff, and I said, it's hard being a single mother, and my younger son said, oh, yeah? Well, what about when we were single kids? Like, that stuff hurts. But I own it, man. Like, I caused them that stuff, you know? And the younger one, like, he's 13 now. He'll be 14 in May. But for a long time, my 10-year-old son was the most responsible person in my home. Like, that's not fair. You know, what about the pain of I stole my kids' childhood? What about the pain of, like, I stole my older one's education through my inability to get him up and send him to school because it was easier just to let you sleep. And, like, that was all stuff that I didn't realize. Pain sucks, you know. And a lot of times the pain comes from just realizing what is reality. Like, reality is painful. Life sometimes can be painful. You know, like, I just went through a spot where life was really painful, and I wanted to lay on the couch and curl up in a ball and not talk to anybody and cry all day and sleep all day, because that's one of my other things. That's a technique that I'll use. Avoid it. So I talked about it. You know, people would show up or they would call regularly and say, what are you doing? If I said sleeping, like, it wasn't usually a good response that I got. What the hell are you sleeping for? It's nice out. Do this, that, and the other thing. So that's what I do, you know. September 24th was my wedding anniversary. And this year was like the sixth anniversary that I didn't have my husband. The year before that, I had all kinds of crazy stuff going on between the job and the court and the sentencing and getting ready to go to jail and figuring out where my kids were going and stuff. Like, I didn't address it then because I ran it over with everything else that was going on. And, like, this year it hurt. You know, like, I sat on my bed and I bawled like a baby and I'm crying, please God, like, it's not supposed to hurt this bad 6 years later. But it wasn't like it was 6 years later. For those other 5 years, like, I covered that pain up with something else. And, like, I got some of it out. My mother's birthday's 3 days after that. You know, that wasn't supposed to hurt that bad either. But it did, because it was the first time, like, I allowed myself to feel that pain and deal with it. The sponsorship thing in that spot was great because, like, I had to go to them. It was like 9:30, quarter 10 at night. I'm pounding on their door. They come downstairs. Like, what's going on? I said, you know what? Like, I really don't know. I just know I'm a hot mess. And they're, like, looking at me, waiting for me to say, no, I didn't get high. And that brought them some pleasure, and that was a good thing. So, you know, we did some things out of the book, like some ninth step amends work, and, like, we can't always make direct amends, especially to people who are already gone, you know, but we took care of it, and like, this year when it comes up, I'll be a little bit better at it, because what I find with pain is, like, it only gets bad if I continue to stuff it and I don't talk about it. Pain for me now generally comes from things that are stuff that I don't need in my life, I have no business holding on to, stuff I'm trying to change, control the outcome of, manipulate, or hide from you and from myself. So that's things that I practice not doing anymore. You know, I'm grateful that, like, the pain got great enough for me to change and that I don't have to put myself through it anymore. I hope that somebody in here today got some help out of what I said, because, like, I remember when, like, I was like Lauren, like, I said yes, and then I was like, oh, like, what, you know, why did I say that? Like, I'm going to go up there and sound like a nut and everything else. But I showed up, and I do it anyway, because, like, I remember when I first got clean in my hometown. Like, I got clean in April, and there was a big speaker jam there in May. And, like, it helped me so much just listening to all these different people and what they had been through. And, like, some of them I had done the same stuff, and some of them I didn't, but, like, their outcome wasn't good. So I know I don't have to go there. So I don't have a whole lot of pain in my life just for today. Like, tomorrow, I don't know what it's bringing. But that's, like, one of the ways I stay clean. Like, I don't forget that pain, and I don't forget where I come from. Thanks for letting me share.